People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
When California's redevelopment agencies were eliminated, affordable housing advocates became very concerned. And some, with the ability to make a difference, went into high gear. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, our guest is California Senator Mark DeSaunier, chairman of the Housing and Transportation Subcommittee. A few words of introduction. Mark DeSaunier was first elected to the Senate in 2008 and was reelected in November of 2012. As chair of Transportation and Housing, Senator DeSaunier has fought for greater accountability on the state's transportation infrastructure projects. We want to publicly thank you, Senator, for all that you've done to increase the availability of affordable housing, especially authoring SB 1220 in the last legislative session and SB 391 in the current session. Through other committee assignments, you've been a strong advocate for California's more vulnerable populations, introducing legislation to support underserved, homeless, and foster youth. You've continued to prioritize safeguarding against corporate sales tax giveaways, fighting prescription drug abuse, protecting homeowners against foreclosure, and supporting safe and efficient transportation systems. Senator, welcome to the podcast.
Delighted to be with you.
So let's start out to bring everyone up to speed on the current landscape. Let's go back for a moment in time to late 2011, early 2012, when the state Supreme Court rendered a set of decisions that resulted in the elimination of redevelopment agencies. Effectively, that eliminated, what, about $1 billion a year that local governments were using to help create and preserve affordable housing?
That's right. That was a 20% set aside.
And you were a leader in efforts to save housing funding at that time and today as well. Can you tell us briefly about what happened and your efforts to save the housing funding?
Well, prior to the Supreme Court decisions, when the governor wanted to eliminate redevelopment agencies, we insisted that we at least set aside the existing revenue so to make sure it would continue to go for housing. And we wanted to continue the housing aspect of redevelopment. Unfortunately, we weren't able to do that. And then, fortunately, I think the legislature tried to work out a compromise. We did work out a compromise that at least would give redevelopment a lifeline. And then, of course, that brought us up to the Supreme Court decision, which, unfortunately, the Supreme Court decided that the first law we passed eliminating redevelopment was constitutional, but the second one, restarting them on a very limited scale, was not constitutional. So now we have nothing.
Those were not good decisions. There was no celebration happening after.
No, not for affordable housing advocates, and not for people who believe that the tax increment financing in redevelopment, when properly used, was a good economic development tool.
In the past year, many localities have committed to serving as housing successor agencies to administer the housing assets and some of the funding that was related to the old RDAs. How they're going to do this isn't entirely clear, which I assume is why you've introduced Senate Bill 341?
Yes.
Let's talk about some of the key provisions in the bill and how they will help at the local level.
Well, we have a wonderful staff person on the Housing Committee, Mark Sivers, who has been working with stakeholders to try to eliminate at least as many of the ambiguities in the current situation as possible, and then add some more language that both he and I and some of the stakeholders think are important. So just some fundamental things like capping the administrative costs for the successor agencies, making it clearer who they are, and being more specific to a very limited degree about how the money can be spent.
Is this temporary fix, or is this? Are we assuming that it's going to go on this way for a while?
I would assume it probably would go on for a while. There are a number of bills related to redevelopment and tax increment financing. Senator Wolk, who's the chair of the Governance and Finance Committee that redevelopment would be in the jurisdiction of, has tried a number. She's got one this year. Senator Steinberg has a really good bill, SB1, that would redefine what we do on tax increment redevelopment, mostly around transit-oriented development and infill, which I also will have a very significant affordable housing component. So the cleanup bill hopefully will be part of an ongoing discussion about how do we do economic development and how do we provide for affordable housing.
Beyond the work that the redevelopment agencies did for housing, they were also an important tool for the revitalization of distressed areas. One example is what's happening in Concord with the Naval Weapons Station. I understand that the city is planning a major reuse that would bring new commercial and housing development to the area. Without RDAs, how will such a project get done?
Yeah, they won't. Having been involved in that project for over 20 years, I was one of the first people when I was on the Concord City Council, when I was mayor of Concord, and started to question whether the Department of Defense really needed to use all 8,000 acres that are out there. So Concord now has, the Navy's agreed to, and the Army has agreed to, under BRAC, give 5,000 of the inland area into the city to be developed. They've done an extensive outreach program, work with stakeholders, environmental groups, developers, citizens around the area, and they have what I think a master plan that's really insightful and a really appropriate use. But it happened right at the time where the housing bubble happened, and then redevelopment went away. So you need to have, for a project like that, it's pretty much impossible to do it without some kind of public financing to get the infrastructure started.
So is there any sort of replacement for the economic development infrastructure components of RDAs?
There's been a number of efforts, both last year and this year. Assemblymember Dickinson has a bill, AB 243, that specifically talks about infrastructure finance districts for closed military bases. I believe Assemblymember Speaker Perez had one last session. So there are a number of these sites around the state. Northern California, we've got not just the Naval Weapons Station, but the Oakland Army Base. Treasure Island's a little bit further along, but still it's impactful. In Southern California, you've got the old El Toro Marine Corps airfield. So there's a definite need, and these are really, really good opportunities to do, I think, really thoughtful big projects that would help with both affordable housing and market rate housing, which, of course, is an issue again now, too, in terms of cost.
Sure. Right now, Senator, the affordable housing community is working with you to find a way to replace some of the lost funding. And we're delighted that you're sponsoring SB 391, the California Homes and Jobs Act. Would you describe the bill for our listeners?
It's a fairly simple bill. It would set a $75 fee on real estate document transactions, with the exception of sales. So mostly refinances. And it would generate about $500 million a year, which would replace, wouldn't obviously catch up to the $1 billion we were getting, but it would be a significant increase off of what we have now.
What's your sense about the impact that it could have on housing and the economy?
Well, we estimate that it would create 29,000 jobs annually, permanent jobs, obviously create construction jobs. It would leverage about $2.8 billion worth of federal funds and other funds. So we think that's why the jobs component is in there. That doesn't just address a housing need and an infrastructure need, but also provides badly needed jobs for California, which is getting better, but still is a very important drag on economic recovery.
And you're not talking about just creating 29,000 jobs once. You're talking about annually.
No, those are ongoing annual contributions to the economy.
In the past, California has passed bonds to support housing production. Why is this a better plan?
Well, for a number of reasons, not the least of which is bonds cost money, obviously. You've got to pay the financing fees, so that's for every $1 that we borrow, it costs roughly $2 over the life of the bond. So this gives us a sustainable revenue source that doesn't have a financing cost associated with it and can get projects up and going, more projects, more bang for your buck, so to speak. And it's sustainable. We'll keep doing it for as long as the legislature keeps the statute in effect. And this is a common practice in other states to provide for affordable housing, is a real estate transaction fee.
Do you anticipate much opposition?
Well, the problem is it's a two-thirds requirement. Last year we had the good fortune and we worked the bill very hard. And again, our staff did a great job. So all 25 Democrats voted for it on the Senate floor, but we needed 27 votes. We worked hard to try to get 2 Republican votes and we're unable to. This year, when we fill our vacancies, we should have 29 votes. So we're hopeful. If we can work the timing out, we think we can, as we fill the vacancies, that we'll have enough votes as long as we can hold on to all the Democrats.
It's so disturbing to hear that these things fall strictly along party lines. I know the difficulties that you had with Senate Bill 1220. I guess the landscape's changed, though, since the November election, so you're more hopeful?
Absolutely. No, I'm very hopeful. You know, and I think hopefully there has been support for affordable housing in the past that was bipartisan. I'm hoping that who knows, we might catch some Republicans who realize that this is a really good investment.
Right. How might our listeners help garner that support?
Well, we have a great website that the stakeholders have put up. You can obviously contact our office or contact any of the advocates for affordable housing. You could contact Eden, for instance, any of the infill builders or people like that. And then our website, or the website for the bill, is cahomesandjobsact.com.
Okay, and I'll repeat that at the end. So if anyone missed it, I'll be repeating that at the tail end. Senator, Governor Brown hasn't yet made housing a top issue for his administration. What is your message to him about why this bill deserves his signature?
Well, the message is there's a real urgency here, that we're losing infrastructure and providers of affordable housing as we speak. There are really significant, urgent pressures on renters in particular, but also home buyers who have their disposable income and their wages eaten up by the high cost of housing, and it's only going to get worse. So one thing we know about California is housing costs have always been traditionally high, irregardless of the upswings and downswings in the economy, and probably equally as important is it creates those 29,000 jobs you talked about, plus it helps the construction sector, which all economists tell us is one of the real inhibiting factors in a real recovery for the state of California.
SB 391 would go a long way to helping alleviate the challenges created by the loss of redevelopment, but it seems that localities are still going to need to find ways to generate funding at the local level. San Francisco recently passed a ballot initiative to fund affordable housing, and many localities might like to do the same, but they would be likely to have to get that two-thirds vote. So are there any efforts in the legislature to help local governments generate their own resources?
There are efforts. There's a number of efforts to lower the threshold for different items, including affordable housing, transportation, libraries. So we'll be talking about that. The discussion has been in our caucus about trying to combine them so that we can lower the threshold for things like affordable housing, would be my argument, so that local voters, depending on the uniqueness of the local community's views and needs, could vote to support affordable housing and those other issues based on their needs in the local community. So there'll be an effort to lower the threshold, probably at 55%, and that would be helpful.
Absolutely. There is so much about SB 391 that's compelling. Once again, I want to give that website where people can get more information. It's cahomesandjobsact.com. California Senator Mark DeSonia, thank you so much for appearing on our podcast today. And also, once again, thanks for being such a champion of affordable housing.
It's my pleasure.
I'm Joanne Green. To hear additional episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast, please visit edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.